Now, as you may have noticed here at The Naked Scientist, we are big fans of Second Life. We beam the programme in there and people turn up and listen to the programme and contribute questions as the programme goes on. If you're not acquainted with Second Life, let me tell you what it is. It's a three-dimensional virtual world. It's on the internet and people can then explore this world on their home computers, and they use computer-generated representations of themselves, these are called avatars, to do that exploration. But what's the added layer here of complexity with Second Life is that you can meet and converse with other people in that world and see the same world they're seeing. And that means you can have conversations with them. It means that you can interact with them in various ways. You can even listen to live radio programmes there, like this one. But the virtual world does need enormous amounts of technology and artificial intelligence to power it. And Meera Senthilingam recently found this out when she went to talk to Dr. Mike Hobbs at a special evening which was held by Anglia Ruskin University as part of the Cambridge Science Festival.
Second Life is a lot of things to a lot of people. Essentially, it's a 3D virtual world that allows users to create images, sounds and activities within an environment that supports this. The key thing that most people end up doing is communicating with other people. So it's a way of mediating communication.
Now, obviously, a lot of complicated technology is involved in creating Second Life, but would you be able to summarise just the amount of technology involved in creating such a virtual world?
The basic unit of Second Life would be a sim or a simulation, which is a square area as represented on a map. That is essentially produced by a core on a chip. Computer chips these days can have dual cores or quad cores. Many of these chips go together to make up entire racks of computing. And so you can find that we have tens of thousands of individual areas all stuck together. And each one of those is supported by a core on a chip, on a board, on a computer, in a database, in a server center rather, and everything that you see and everything that you do is bits and bytes somewhere. It's entries in a large number of databases that record where you've been, what you're doing, what you're trying to see at the moment, what someone else is seeing you do as well. It is quite accurate on your view of the world, and someone else's view of the world is kept in sync. Quite a technological feat.
When Second Life first came about, it was thought that, you know, it might just dominate the world. Do you think this is still going to happen with it?
No, I think Second Life is a part of the internet and has a particular technological base and technological limitations that it actually takes quite a lot more effort to generate these things than a lot of people may first assume. I suspect the air conditioning unit for the servers is taking up as much power as small village or a small town. So if you scale that up, you can see, well, there are going to be fundamental limits.
Now, your background is in artificial intelligence. To what extent do you think artificial intelligence is being used in Second Life, and to what extent could it be used in Second Life?
It's been used quite a lot because of the fairly powerful level of scripting. There's a language in Second Life that allows you to get objects and avatars even to react in certain ways. So you can program interaction, so which is different to a lot of game environments which are more limited.
This evening you showed us the possibility for avatars to own dogs, and this uses artificial intelligence, doesn't it?
Yes, the dogs have quite a sophisticated level of artificial intelligence. They have a basic set of actions. The user doesn't actually see the programming languages underlying them. They interact with them by asking them to do things like roll over, beg, howl, and they can also add these actions together to get dogs to do more complicated sequences of actions. The dogs also have a random behaviour mode where they will do something out of their repertoire. And if you praise them by telling good dog, it will be more likely to use that particular action.
So these dogs are actually being conditioned in the same way a real dog would?
Yes, they're being trained. And in fact, there are dog training classes, or more accurately, owner training classes, because the dogs don't need training, it's the owners need training on how to interact with a dog.
So if it's possible for people to have dogs, what else do you think is possible?
Well, there's certainly other animals. I know there's quite a big equestrian sector, and there are more mundane activities such as vending machines and chat bots that will interact with you and say good morning. Greeting bots, which can be really annoying, come up and say hello, how are you, here's a card, you know, read this, do that, can I take you on a tour, and that sort of thing. So there are little bits of animated activity that give the impression of an artificial intelligence.
Now, what would you say the benefits and advantages of using Second Life are?
Well, they're multiple. They're on a personal level, I think it's a great way of interacting and meeting people, because it's very easy to fall into chatting with people. I was wandering around an art exhibition and saw this annoying person actually dressed as a witch on a broom flying around the room. Turned out to be the artist, and we had a nice conversation about how his inspiration was created, and had a much greater insight than I would do just by looking at the static art. So there's the communication side of things and the exploration side. There used to be a representation of Paris. There's certainly a representation of Krakow in Poland. And science exhibitions and the National Physical Laboratory has interesting stuff going on.
And finally, where do you think Second Life is going next? So in like 5 years, what do you think Second Life is going to be like?
To a certain extent, Second Life is ahead of the curve. So I think more things will be more like Second Life. I think there are some fundamental limitations as to how big it's going to get, but I think the richness and quality of what's going on in it will improve.
So keep an eye out in Second Life for even more virtual things to see and do. That was Dr. Mike Hobbs from Anglia Ruskin University talking to Mira Senthilingam earlier this week at a special event about Second Life for the Cambridge Science Festival. I'm in Second Life quite a lot, actually, and I never knew that you could have dogs. But I wonder what the artificial intelligence would be behind a cat, because you can't train it. It just does what it wants.
Well, of course, when I'm not here on the programme, I often connect at home and join in with the people who listen. And last week someone turned up in an ambulance, which I thought was hilarious. There was this annoying siren going off before the show started, and I thought, I hope they're not going to keep that going during the programme. And then I looked around to see where it was coming from, and someone drove up in an ambulance. And I said, did anyone call an ambulance? As this person got out of this ambulance, it's hilarious.
Were there no Win, no fee solicitors following it closely behind?
Almost certainly. Thank you, Ben.
Laying the facts bare.
I say.
The Naked Scientists.